Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 128. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Monday, Steelers Nation. Dave, rookie minicamp later this week, starting off Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So looking forward to that, which is good because other than that, it's pretty quiet on the Steelers front right now. But Dave, how you doing? How's your weekend?
Yeah, it went well. I sat down and watched all 3 hours of that Tom Brady roast on Netflix on Sunday night. Pretty entertaining. They probably could have got away with making that 2 hours instead of 3 hours, but that was something to watch. Watched a couple of hockey games, playoff hockey games over the weekend. Watched the Pirates pull out a couple of wins, which was nice for a change. And let's see, rookie mini camp coming up at the end of this week, so that'll keep us busy later on in this week. I've also been monitoring the Seattle Seahawks salary cap situation. I get on these kicks, man, where there's something that I don't want to let go of. And right now I forgot to notate a couple of things of theirs before I went to bed last night on the public salary cap report page. And I wake up this morning and they've got more salary cap space. Mm. And I don't know why I do this. I spent this morning trying to go down rabbit hole to figure out who they restructured. I don't think it was DK Metcalf. The whole reason I'm paying attention to this is I'm kind of wondering what they're going to do with DK Metcalf. And as we talked on the on a previous show there, even though probably odds are against it, I do kind of wonder if DK Metcalf might be a guy that they consider trading after June 1st. But anyway, this isn't Seahawks Depot, but I will be monitoring their salary cap because they were right up against it. They signed their first round draft pick, so you knew something was going to have to happen there. I imagine as we get on into the later portions of this week, I don't know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we'll be talking about some Steelers draft picks signing their contracts. I would imagine who we have. Logan Lee probably going to sign his deal. Ryan Watts will probably sign his deal. Maybe Mason McCormick gets his deal done, but we should have some movement on some of these rookie draft pick contracts by the end of the week here.
Hey, just as a preview, at pick number 20 for Troy Fa'utanu, what is the difficulty in terms of getting that deal done historically last year or two? Has there been, because there's always kind of those, issues around middle, 16 to 20 where you're kind of in that weird offset no man's land. Is that a potential issue where that might delay Fa'utanu getting signed? Or is 20 kind of a pretty easy, everything set in stone, the precedent's there, you just basically have to agree on some small things and you're good to go?
Yeah, I think the only thing that would delay that, remember, roll back to Broderick Jones last year. The only thing that ended up, I think, being a holdup on him, and it obviously didn't run as long as Joey Porter Jr. Did. It's just the time frame and payout of the signing bonus, I think. Is a main sticking point because all these first rounders now, and heck, I even think you get on deep into these second rounders and all now, they're fully guaranteed deals at this point. So there's not much haggling, especially when you get into first round and only about pick 20 and all like that, as is the case with Fa'utanu. There's not much really to work out there. Look, I don't expect him to be the straggler. And here's one thing that I need to do. I need to get with Daniel Salib and try to find out if any of these Steeler draft picks in like the second, third or fourth round end up being kind of on that questionable line of, you know, the fully guaranteed line of you know, how much of the contract's guaranteed, you know, where was the line last year? And, you know, are the Steelers are close to being on that line to see if any of those guys might, you know, take a little bit longer this year. But I would imagine Fa'utano comes to agreement sooner rather than later. It's not going to, I wouldn't expect it to linger close to training camp at all. And I think the only thing there negotiation wise is time frame of payout on the signing bonus.
Is there any reason why teams would really care about the payout schedule of signing bonuses? I know for Pittsburgh, it can depend a bit. Sometimes they pay it basically all at once. Sometimes it's more installments. Is there any particular reason?
I think it's a whole escrow thing and, you know, wanting to hold on to the money as long as possible, you know, to keep it in the bank. So that stuff, that would be great to have Omar Khan tell you exactly why, but we'll never find that out. But I think it's just payout due to escrow and time frame and those corner, you know, cash flow things and stuff of that nature.
Okay, gotcha. Dave, let's talk rookie minicamp here for a moment since it's a thing upcoming. Again, this Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 3-day event. They'll have their rookie class. They'll have select first-year players. They'll have undrafted free agents and a slew of tryout names. One name who we expect to not be there, unfortunately, and Dave, you dug into this more last night for the site, was Corey Trice Jr. And despite him missing his entire rookie season with a torn ACL, suffered in the first day of pad practices of training camp, not playing in even a preseason game, it does not appear that Trice is eligible for rookie minicamp. So explain why that would be for a guy that has not played a snap in a game and hardly even practiced for the team.
Yeah, and shame on me for getting people's hopes up even about this in future, in previous conversations on the podcast and maybe a post or two there. There's so much to have to try to remember about the CBA and this, that, and the other. And I finally got around on Sunday to looking for something to write about. And obviously with rookie mini camp coming up and us talking about Trice, and I finally dug back into the CBA, and Matthew Marksey, in fact, wrote about this, you know, I think more a couple of years ago about the CBA and injured players and who's eligible. And I had forgot all about that. And that came up as part of my research. And I dug back down into the CBA and all to find out, you know, who is eligible and who is not eligible to participate in rookie minicamps. Obviously, all rookies are, right? You know, draft picks, undrafted free agents, those types of players. Also eligible to participate are up to, I think it says up to 5 veterans not currently under contracts with teams. Now, we've seen already a couple of those veterans outside the organization invited in, right? The former Ravens corner. Who are a couple of
Anthony Everett, I know, is one. I don't know if there are any others currently that we know of. Last year, I know Nick Boyle had come in as a long snapper, right, Trying to reinvent his career after being a tight end that suffered that terrible knee injury. So that would be the veteran exception for tryout players.
Right. So I think the CBA says up to 5 of those, but they obviously can't be under contract with any teams at that time. Obviously rookie tryout players, boy, that's going to be a long list when it rolls out later on, and normally is anyway, but with just 5 undrafted free agents this year, probably going to be about four or five more tryout players in its place there. So you've got the rookies, you've got veteran tryouts, you've got rookie tryouts, and also first year players. Now, first year players are players that are obviously not rookies, but they don't have a credited season yet. And I believe a credited season is defined as 6 or more games on a roster, whether it be the 53-man roster, PUP, IR or you know, along those levels. Now, here's the thing with Corey Trice Jr. He was obviously on IR all last season. He received one credited season for being on IR. So he is not considered, I do not believe, eligible because of that credited season there. Now, you'll see guys on this roster who obviously were, heck, how many years did Hooks go?
About 4 or 5 rookie minicamps LeVon Hooks attended.
Yeah, and that's because he had never fully registered a credited season in the NFL here. And, you know, if you look at this year's list of guys, you know, that will be allowed to participate, you know, there'll be some guys that were on the practice squad last year for the Steelers, you know, so there'll be 4 or 5 of those guys. But after further review, I do not believe that Corey Trice Jr., if healthy enough to do so, will be eligible to participate in rookie minicamp. And they really need to take, and this was kind of the conclusion that Matthew Marksey came to in that post of his, I think a few years ago. The CBA really needs to take a hard look at this. And there's, you know, in the next negotiations, look, I realize they don't want veteran, you know, a lot of guys with one credited season participating every year in or having the ability to participate in rookie mini camps because they are the NFLPA, obviously. And this has a lot to do. You have to submit this list to, I think, the NFLPA Management Council for approval before, if you read that in the CBA as well too, because they're the ones that have to sign off on eligibility on some of these guys to participate in this thing. And I would venture to guess that the management council wants as many guys not under contract or on the fringe of rosters to have the ability to participate in these to improve their chances to make the roster, right?
Sure, that would make sense. But if you're a guy that's been on IR for the entire season, what upper hand have you gained over somebody else?
Right. And that's kind of what I wrote about partially in that post on Sunday night was, you know, in a nutshell, I get what the goal is here, but come on, they need to open this up and really specifically to players that perhaps missed their full rookie season, players that maybe got a credited season because they spent the whole rookie season on IR. Those guys should also have be afforded the opportunity to participate in rookie mini camps again, because obviously this would be Corey Trice's second rookie mini camp. But look, there's going to be a lot of guys out there at Steelers rookie mini camp that this is not their first rookie mini camp, you know, because they are considered first year players. Those guys that spend a full full rookie season on IR, in my opinion, should be afforded the same opportunity to go and compete to participate in rookie mini camp. So you know, that's my takeaway there. And once again, shame on me for not having that out of the way, you know, prior to us, you know, talking about Corey Trice over the last several weeks here. But yeah, it does not appear as though he'll be able to participate in that. And that's a damn shame because he could use the reps.
If you've never appeared in a regular season game before, you should be eligible for a community camp. That'd be one of my stances on how to create that list.
Or at the very least, had not been on, you know, they ought to make it on the active or inactive roster for X amount of games or something, because a player obviously could be on the 53-man roster and not dress for any of those games, you know?
Sure. It could be one of the stipulations if you don't have credited seasons, or if you've never appeared in a regular season game, then you're eligible. There's a way to do it, obviously. It's a small thing that only affects a couple players, I'm sure, but still, I think it'd be important for somebody like Trice and probably some others around the league as well.
Right. And how long would a list would that be league wide of rookies that are still under contract with, you know, with their team that spent, you know, their rookie season on IR? I mean, I know you're splitting hairs here as far as where do you draw the line on some of these guys, but, you know, I think in these type situations, I mean, the guy did not get a chance to participate in any practices past his ACL injury in training camp last year. You know, yeah, I'm trying to build a better mousetrap here. I realize that. And I know they've thought a lot of this out in doing this, but maybe that's something. And look, this is not going to change until you have some sort of CBA negotiations. And I don't know if you read some of what's going on. Roger Goodell's trying to get this, you know, trying to get some CBA, maybe negotiations to happen before it's actually up to try to accommodate, you know, and that one more regular season game and all like that. If they're going to go that far and talk about that stuff, you know, maybe they should talk about some of this other minor stuff as well too. But anyway, it is what it is. And unless I have read this wrong and translated it wrong, I don't think Corey Trice will be out there this weekend. And that's, you know, obviously, you know, speculating that he's healthy enough to do so. And all we really have to go on at this point is a picture at, you know, during the start of phase one here of him being on the field. But he is, you know, it has been roughly 9 months, I think, since his surgery. And that's generally about time that guys are able to get back moving around like that.
Sure. So again, we'll get the list hopefully later this week, Wednesday, Thursday, of the rookie minicamp roster. We know most of the names who will be on it. We'll know probably an additional dozen or so tryout names that we don't know yet. One tryout name that came in over the weekend is Central Michigan defensive tackle Jaquez Bristol has accepted his invite to Steelers rookie minicamp. He was, again, at Central Michigan last year, came in at 5'11 and 284 pounds. So the sub 6 foot defensive tackle. Ran, though, a nice 5.02 40-yard dash. Was pretty productive in his career at 28 tackles for loss, 13 sacks last year at 8 tackles for loss, and 4 sacks a team captain. So one of the many tryout players. Again, they have open roster spots. They typically sign between 1 to 3 tryout players per cycle. We'll see what happens on the other side come Sunday, Monday.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be talking about, you know, a couple of these guys getting signed because they obviously, like you said, I think they have, what, 4? Open roster spots now because of the exemption on the international player.
Right, on Welshoff. There's 87 on the roster, but Welshoff does not count. And so in that technical sense, there's 4 open roster spots to their max of 90.
All right. So anyway, we'll be talking more about that later on in the week, and can't wait to see the roster that's released for that, because I'm sure we don't have all of the invites yet.
Sure. Should get a decent number of those still whenever the roster comes out. Dave, this one guy will not be at rookie meeting camp either. Certainly is not eligible. We're not arguing for him to be, but you talk about some maybe early sleeper names to look at on this roster. We kind of had the same thought at the same time. I wrote about this yesterday. I think you were planning on discussing it as well, but Marquez Callaway signed to a reserve futures contract after Pittsburgh season ended following their wild card loss to Buffalo. He's a guy, if you want an early sleeper name for a team still looking for that outside receiver, Callaway could be that name. Former undrafted free agent out of Tennessee, had a strong 2021 season with New Orleans, where Michael Thomas was out for the season, put up some nice numbers, and has kind of gotten really quiet since. Only appeared in 3 games last year, did not catch a pass with the Saints. But talk about a guy with some talent, the skill set Pittsburgh's looking for, some experience. Until this team adds a receiver, Callaway could be that sleeper name that could try to capture a roster spot.
Yeah, what's funny is as part of my going through stuff and thinking about things to maybe write about this week and on Sunday specifically, I was rolling back through some names there and got to Callaway's name and said, man, I'm going to write about him today. I look up and you did a futures report on him yesterday morning that hit the site there. And look, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, this team and, you know, it'd be nice to have somebody else that can play on the outside that, you know, other than, you know, some of these guys that they've signed like Quez Watkins and Van Jefferson. And, although we talked about, Callaway, you know, not long after he had signed a futures deal and all like that. I think it is a good time to kind of revisit him. I think you put this in your post yesterday, and I think, you know, even Josh Carney, I think maybe he was the one that wrote about him when he was signed a futures deal and all. Zach Kazani recruited him at Tennessee.
Okay. Yeah, I think it must have been Josh that put that, because it wasn't in my article.
Because Zach was only there, I think, that first year that Callaway was at Tennessee. Then Zani went a different direction there. But I believe Zach Azani actually recruited Callaway. And, you know, obviously Callaway has gone on to the NFL, has bounced around with the Saints, and then spent time with the Broncos, obviously. What has, in your limited looks at Callaway, I mean, why hasn't this guy been able to kind of stick and carve out a little bit a better role yet? Now, I did go down the rabbit hole of looking at some of his special team snaps, and he probably would do well to show everything he's got on special teams this summer with the Steelers when it comes to making a roster spot. But when you look at a guy with his size and athletic ability and all like that, I mean, you wouldn't think other than the want to aspect that it would be a hindrance of him being able to at least, you know, maybe be a gunner or something like that. Although gunners, you could put a guy out there. It doesn't mean you stand in a garage. It doesn't make you a car. But I mean, I would think overall, this is a guy that could be able to show you something, on special teams, maybe in a gunner role or something like that. But talking about him as a wide receiver specifically, I went back and rolled back yesterday and kind of looked at a couple of clips on him. I mean, he's not obviously the straight line speed. I think that's always kind of been the knock on him, but he is a guy that seems to be able to get open and, you know, fairly good hands and creates explosive plays and can do things after the catch. What has been the main hindrance with him?
Yeah, I was trying to go back and find some research on why things went so quiet after 2021, and I really couldn't come up with an answer other than just, you know, just the regular churn. And I think, you know, Michael Thomas had come back a bit healthier after missing an entire season, a little bit healthier. He's been hurt, you know, habitually since then. I really couldn't figure out exactly why he went from a guy that was producing and, you know, one of the most productive players on the Saints that season offensively to basically just fading away. I mean, they drafted Chris Olave the year after, right? So that probably was one factor as well, where they just started adding more receiver talent and that pushed a guy like Callaway down on the depth chart. But I really don't know how he fell off so much the way that he did.
I even went and looked. I said, well, is he a butt of a teammate or something like that? Evidently, he's thought of especially with the Broncos, he's thought of very highly. So it doesn't seem like he's got an attitude problem overall. And look, guys like him churn through the league every 3 years, every year and every 3 years, you know, the league cycles out anyway, for the most part. So it's not like, you know, from a measurable aspect, specifically an athletic standpoint, it's not like it's off the charts or anything like that. But I mean, when you look at the tape though, you know, he's been able to produce at the NFL level.
Sure. It was really primarily one season, but it was a notable one. So all my point is basically, Dave, is that there's an opportunity there. There's a need for this team to have a bigger, more physical outside receiver who can produce until they add somebody in that capacity. Because as of right now, you got Pickens as your Z. Wilson is primarily a slot. Yes, he can play some outside. He will play some outside, but he is, to me, your primary slot receiver. And then Van Jefferson, he can play all over. Watkins can kind of do the same. But to me, they're just not at that caliber of quality to be, you know, starting number two outside type of receivers. Calvin Austin can play outside as well, but also primarily thought of as that slot receiver into a different body type and skill set than Marquez Callaway. So there's just a bit of uniqueness to him in the current receiver room. There are guys like Denzel Mims that will try to compete that have similar body types, but not the level of productivity at the NFL level that Callaway has shown and flashed in his career. So just a name to watch in camp. I mean, it could, you know, we were talking about Hakeem Butler a year ago and that didn't work out. So right. We don't know where this thing's going to go. I'm just matching up a guy that has the skill set Pittsburgh's looking for with some experience and the opportunity that is there for the taking.
All right, rank them. Callaway, Van Jefferson, and Quez Watkins.
I mean, I don't have a great ranking. I take all these guys into camp and just say they have a chance and opportunity. I mean, again, I think we're talking of a different skill sets and different things you bring to the table. Jefferson knows the offense a bit better. Being with Arthur Smith last season, I'll give him a leg up initially, but all these guys will learn it and they'll be on even playing fields generally by the time training camp starts. I mean, I'll say if you made me choose.
Wait, which one do you think has the best shot of the three of making? And look, that all three of them very well might not, you know,
depending on what
happens here. But I mean, of what you know right now about these three, which one of the three would maybe have the best chance, do you think?
I mean, they're all rowing the same boat. It's basically just who's in the front of that boat. I mean, I would just guess, you know, Callaway and then maybe Watkins and Jefferson, but you could really order these guys in any which way. To me, it's negligible. It just comes down to, you know, who shows up in camp, who can provide some special teams help. None of these guys have great special teams resumes. Right. And so Callaway's done some return stuff. Did you see anything else beyond kick return, punt return on his resume?
He has done a very limited gunner, but I don't think there's any stats to show from that, you know.
Okay, so, but at least there's some reps there.
Yeah, he has done it before, and I think a little bit more than the other two have.
Okay, so that can help a little bit. Again, they'll all be given the opportunity. So, you can rank him in any way you want. I would just say Callaway, Watkins, and Jefferson, but it's really – they're all grouped together. But I just think Callaway's skill set – is a bit different and is more of what Pittsburgh's looking for on the outside.
I would agree. And I would rank them as far as loosely right now, chances of making the roster. I it would be Callaway in my opinion, probably in my, you know, study of him would have the best shot. And then it would be a toss up with me between Jefferson and Watkins behind there. I think it's, you know, B1 and B2, if you would.
Sure. So just name the watch. I mean, I also don't want to forget about Des Fitzpatrick, who has true special teams value and made the team because of what he did as a gunner on the coverage teams last year inside stadiums. And that was impressive. He came on strong in training camp. So that's a guy that could try to sneak in as a number five receiver, as that true special teamer to replace somebody like Miles Boykin for a team that will have to have two new starting gunners this year in Boykin being replaced and James Pierre being replaced as well. So that thing's wide open and we'll see who else they add. Again, if they sign and add a veteran receiver along the way before training camp begins, there's another name into that mix. So it's really going to be one crowded back end of that room with guys trying to scratch and claw to separate.
If I were Callaway, I'd get Darius Hayward Bay on the phone and say, what did you do? Because remember all that time, you know, when Darius Hayward Bay came in, I mean, he ended up being a pretty damn good, decent special teams guy. And that ended up extending his career a little bit there. So, if I'm Callaway, I work on trying to become a good gunner.
Sure. That would, of course, help. But I think there is that opportunity as that outside receiver. It would still take a lot for Callaway to be a starting receiver come week one. But just based on the current construction of the roster, there's a hole there and he could try to fill it.
Right. And we'll obviously see how that depth chart, how that room changes here in the next, you know, several weeks here.
I think really it's also about ranking kind of the Watkins, Jefferson, and Calvin Austin, who's going to emerge from there. Because it'd be, I think, an upset if all three were on this roster mm-hmm. to start week one.
Right. And look, I mean, we talk about these three in Callaway, once again, in Callaway, Jefferson, and Watkins. There's a good chance all three of them don't make it, you know?
Yeah, they all have to fight for their opportunity and for their spot in that competition. I think the team will appreciate. But again, hopefully they add to that room because they really, really need to add some other veteran presence. I don't know who that's going to be. The free agent market is really dried up at this point. I mean, is it going to be Valdez Scantling? I think he's even visiting the Chargers mm-hmm. this week or something. So, you know, he may not even be an option for too much longer, and he's not a great option to begin with. So I really don't know what their plan is. Are they going to try to pull off a trade now? Are they going to try to do something right before week one on cutdowns or a trade? We're just going to have to kind of wait and see.
Yeah, who was the most recent one to sign? I mean, I know Boyd was visiting the Titans, but I don't think anything got there. You just mentioned Valdez Scantling visiting somebody.
I mean, on Friday, Chark and Odell Beckham Jr. signed during the show.
Okay. Trying to think was who, I mean, you look at this, the available list out there on over the cap of guys, and they're not even caught up with all these guys that have signed. But I mean, it, the list is, I mean, you're down to kind of like Boyd. I mean, Hunter Renfro's a slot guy. You know, Michael, what's Michael Thomas in his situation? I mean, he's been banged up last couple of years, right?
Sure. Health has been a big issue, but he probably is the most notable outside receiver name still on the market.
I think Russell Gage and Zay Jones are looking for work.
Mm.
You get past that. Ugh.
Yeah, not great overall. So we'll see what the team's plan is. It's still to be continued, to be announced, hopefully.
I still got this part of me that thinks they make a deal for one after June 1st, but we'll see.
We'll see. It's when that time comes, we'll certainly revisit things and see where this team stands. All right, Dave, we're going to do a part three of this and finally get an answer today on Ryan Watts. I know for the two shows we've been talking, despite us having the power of the internet at our fingertips, just not really looking it up the way that we probably should have. So I dug into it this weekend to see, okay, Ryan Watts, 34 and a half inch arms. Where does that stack up historically? And yes, arm length is just arm length. That doesn't mean he's going to be a great player or anything like that. It's just a nice little factoid. And also Pittsburgh gravitating towards those avatar type of cornerbacks that are tall and long and just have the look of a new age type of corner. And so I used that website we talked about. Was it mock draftable with the web? And to my knowledge, if you consider Watts a corner and there's some discussion, will he move to safety at the NFL level? Since at least 1999, no corner has had longer arms than his 34 and a half inches. The longest previously was DeAndre Hall in 2016 at 34 and 3/8. In terms of defensive backs at large, talking safeties or corners, I could only find one who was longer, and that was Josh Harvey Clemens out of Louisville back in 2016, I believe it was. He came in at 35 and 3/8. Which is insane. But he was kind of a linebacker hybrid type because he didn't run well. He ran in the 4.7. So I don't know exactly how he was used in his brief NFL career, primarily on special teams. George Ioka, the former Bengals safety, was 34 and a half inches that matched Ryan Watts. But essentially, you're getting, if he's going to play some corner, the longest armed corner in maybe NFL history.
All right. Well, we finally got to the bottom of that. We knew he was long. Just had to dig down. How long did it? Did you do all that on Mock Draftable or no?
Yeah. And I cross-referenced with Draft Scout and NFL.com just to double check myself. But yeah, there's been, what is it, 3, 4, 5, 7 corners since 1999 with 34-plus inch arms, according to Mock Draftable. And two of them are currently Steelers, and Joey Porter Jr., who had 34-inch arms for last year's draft. And still does, of course. And then Ryan Watts at 34 and a half. And so, again, Pittsburgh very much clearly gravitating towards a type of cornerback.
All right. So I get already get these reports coming in from Draft Scout because I subscribe to their service and all like that. And they're already hard at work at 2025 draft class. So I need to go find, I need to go start looking at the kid with the longest arms, right? The corner with the longest arms.
And you'll find a future Steeler. Yeah. Now, again, arm length does not mean you're going to be great. DeAndre Hall didn't work out. It was a guy in 2010, Brian Jackson, 34 inch arms. He didn't work out. In 2023, there was Porter Jr., who obviously had a very successful rookie season. There was Juju Brent from Kansas State. Pittsburgh showed some interest in, drafted by the Colts. And Chris Ballard likes those long type of corners as well, like Seattle has done, like the Colts now, like Pittsburgh. We'll see, you know, how Brent's career goes. So this is not to say that Watts will be a successful NFL player, but it is, I think, always interesting when you're drafting basically an elite record number in some category with one of your prospects, especially your six round prospect.
We need to come up with one of them disclaimers like all these lawyer commercials have, right? does not guarantee or like these drug companies.
Right. Or we're like frolicking in the background as they're reading off this horrific list of side effects.
Right. Long arms does not guarantee success at all, but it is something fun that we're probably the only two that care about this, but it will be interesting. Look, he's obviously, Ryan Watts is going to participate in rookie minicamp. I wonder if he'll be asked about those long arms.
Or where he'll be playing. Will he be used as a corner, as a safety? Now, maybe sometimes the numbers game of rookie minicamp with smaller rosters may dictate just play corner because we don't have enough corners. I don't know, but we'll see. Maybe get some indication of how he's being used and get to hear from him as well. Dave, just going back to Corey Trace here for a second. I had written this morning, I know the offseason is not over and more players will be added and circumstances can and likely will change. But my list of veteran winners and losers of the 2024 offseason based on what Pittsburgh did do or in some cases did not do. Now, I consider veterans as anybody who was on the roster a year ago. Did they benefit from Pittsburgh's moves or were they hindered by them? For my winners list, I have Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren. I know that Harris coming off the option being declined may not feel like a winner, but I think there is an upside for him being 1 year closer to free agency and just in general for a team that is focused so much on improving the offensive line, improving the run game, bringing in a run-minded offensive coordinator in Arthur Smith. If Harris has a big season, that's going to cash in for the 2025 season. So I think for him and Warren, as Pittsburgh really gets to the nuts and bolts and foundations of their offense in terms of winning up front and being tough and being physical, running the heck out of the football, that's good for both those guys.
Absolutely, yeah. Big win for them so far this offseason, both of them.
I have George Pickens on my winners list too, because right now he is the number one receiver when there's not really a clear number two type of guy behind him. Roman Wilson will get his targets and get his opportunity, but this offense could, this passing game, especially on the outside, should truly run through George Pickens, which could create a big year for him. And that's a guy that may be angling for a contract extension after the season.
And also, you got him. He got himself a quarterback that can hopefully get him the ball a little bit better to him.
Yeah, a big upgrade there from Pickett to Russell Wilson. I also put this Fitzpatrick, who I mentioned earlier, on the winner's list, just because when you lose Boykin and Pierre, when you have Callaway, Watkins, Jefferson, guys that aren't really known for their special teams ability, Fitzpatrick could try to have the angle of being that number five receiver to replace Boykin as a special teamer. Now, it's still going to be a tough path for him, but I think there is an opportunity for him to make the roster, whereas last year it was kind of really tough when you're competing with Miles Boykin. So not exactly the name we'll put the banner for, but Des Fitzpatrick, I think his chances of making the roster have gone up.
Yeah, especially if he can get in with Danny Smith and all, for sure.
Right. And then I mentioned earlier, Corey Trace Jr. I put Darius Rush on that winner's list as well for this team. They lose Levi Wallace. They lose James Pierre. They do trade for Dante Jackson, but there isn't a lot of outside corner depth. It's really Trice and Rush and some of the future guys they're competing with right now. There weren't any free agents added. There weren't any draft picks signed or besides besides Ryan Watson. We'll have to see, is he going to be, corner safety, and he's still a rookie six-round pick. So no guarantee on either of those guys. They have a lot to prove, obviously, but there's a real opportunity to be that potential backup corner behind Dante Jackson, who's not a great corner in the last year of his contract as well.
Boy, if you could just get one of those guys to take a nice leap forward in the second year, and there's a chance both of them maybe could. And you want to talk about really hitting a lottery pick or two if both of those guys take the step forward. So yeah, absolutely. I understand why you have them on the winner's side there.
Yeah. And on special teams as well, they can certainly make an impact and should be given the chance to do so. On the losers list, I put Dan Moore Jr., an obvious name for this team continuing to draft first round tackles. I don't know exactly who's going to start week one. It's not impossible for Moore to do so, but the clock seems ticking on him. When you draft Jones last year, he holds him off, and then you draft Fagutanu this year. At some point, Moore is not going to be a starting left tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so that meter, as you like to say, is running.
Absolutely. That's understandable selection there.
I put Cam Hayward on the losers list. Nothing against Hayward himself. He's back. He's healthy. Those are all important. But while Pittsburgh did add some D-line depth in Dean Lowry and six-round pick Logan Lee, they really have not added somebody to me that can substantially, significantly help reduce Cam Hayward's snap count, which has been the team's goal and what they've said. They want to try to be able to get Hayward to play a bit less, to play fresher, and is, you know, soon to be today's his birthday, actually. I think he turned 35 years old today. So I've not really seen that overall. And you were hoping maybe this team would be, you know, adding something a bit more of significance to more confidently rotate out Cam Hayward to keep him fresh in game and throughout the course of a season. So it's kind of a soft loser and nothing against him. Obviously, it's all circumstantial. That's what most of this list is about. But you're still kind of missing that successor and somebody that could really confidently play 20 or so snaps per game to reduce some of the workload and burden that Hayward has to carry.
Right. If there was they did not do him any favors list, if it was winners, losers, and did not do any favors, Cam Hayward being a they did not do him any favor list there because of what you said. It's not a knock on him. It's just that they're gonna hook the pumps up to him again, you know.
Yeah. So that they're just going to have to play this guy all the snaps he can handle. And obviously, you know, he can play at a really high level, but at some point there has to be some conversation about trying to get him to play a little bit less. And I'm not really seeing that, especially in sub packages right now. You have Hayward, Ogunjobi, Benton. Who else could really play in sub packages for you right now in your nickel defense as pass rushers?
Man, it sure would have been nice to see DeMarvin Leal take that next step last year.
Right. Definitely. I mean, I know Mon Adams kind of can. He's athletic, but he's not really been a successful pass rusher. Our metrics show he's really been unsuccessful, even in terms of pressures getting to the quarterback.
Yeah, Montrevious is who Montrevious is at this point.
Next loser on the list was Mark Robinson for this team, signing Patrick Queen, drafting Peyton Wilson. We'll have to see what Cole Holcomb does and doesn't do in terms of his injury status. That's going to impact Robinson's roster spot and role, but it just continues to show this team does not have much confidence in Robinson. Even at best, he'll be a number four inside linebacker, special teamer that probably is not going to be set for much play time on defense, barring injuries.
Man, you roll all the way back to what Terrell Austin had said, even what prior to last season started, you know, 2024, he was already talking about 2024 with Mark Robinson, you know, to see maybe what he has there. So at most, this team's probably going to carry five inside linebackers. We know two of them are going to be obviously Patrick Queen and Elandon Roberts. At least we think that we know, you know, Robert's going to stick around to see his final season under contract there. And then obviously you have the draft pick tied up in Peyton Wilson. He shouldn't make it, and to be determined on what happens with Cole Holcomb. And then after that, you know, that's the spot Robinson is going to be battling for.
Then the final name on the losers list is Spencer Anderson. When you draft three offensive linemen in one class, and Troy Bautanu and Zach Frazier and then Mason McCormick, you know, I have Anderson, as we went through our roster prediction the other day, my 10th offensive lineman for a team that keeps nine. Typically, somebody gets hurt, they trade Dan Moore, then that could open up. But Anderson has gone from being inside the 53-man bubble to probably being outside it as you enter training camp, and that puts him on the losers list.
Yeah, that's understandable there.
Anybody else you would put on there, winners or losers? Anybody else you think I had some others mentioned just briefly as well, but anybody else that you think should be on either of these two lists?
Let's see. You even have in the worth mentioning Nate Herbig, DeMarvin Leal, Rodney Williams. That makes sense there.
On the loser side, yeah.
Right.
And I say Herbig, for Frazier, Leal, for the D-line depth, and Williams, when they add Pruitt, that may squeeze Williams out.
Right. Yeah, I mean, all of it adds up, especially on the names on both lists that you said, others worth mentioning. Both, you have one Herbig on the winners. And look, I mean, that, you know, it looks like he's going to be the number three outside linebacker, right?
As he should be. I really am excited for Nick Herbig in year two to make that jump. With Golden now officially out, Jeremiah Moon is that clear number four. And so that's a good thing. Winner's list for Nick Herbig.
All right. Good, good discussion piece there.
All right, Dave, I did a video as well on Zach Frazier, just kind of, you know, called it Frazier Island. We talk about Revis Island, all the islands these corners are on. How about Frazier Island? I think it's so important for a center in Pittsburgh, not just in general. It's important for any team to have that really strong anchor point. But in Pat Meyer's system, the center is often working 1v1. In past years, under different coaches, you typically see the centers helping the guards or the guards helping the centers. In Pat Meyer's scheme, that you know, there can be help there, but typically the guards help the tackles. When the guards are uncovered, they're looking for work to help the tackles and provide inside support to the tackles and can secure the edge. And the center is then left 1v1 in a lot of situations against the tackles or linebackers. And so you need that center that can really anchor and hold the zone without help in pass protection. And so I go through a video on the site that goes through one example of that in Pittsburgh to kind of show what I mean by that, and then showing some clips of Frazier doing that in college as well. So really important to get that center position right, because I think it really has an additional significance in pass pro under somebody like Pat Meyer.
What do you think about his recognition? He's got very high recognition, doesn't he, on twists and stunts and stuff like that?
Sure, and that comes with experience. When you play almost 3,000 snaps the way that he has, and you know, smart guy, 4.0 GPA in high school, began with an engineering degree in college. I think he switched degrees, but still had a 3.88 GPA. You watch him on tape, just tape study, the experience. I mean, this is a guy that is not going to be phased by all the kind of different NFL looks and fronts they're going to give you on third down pressure packages.
Yeah, and you know, one of my takeaways when studying him throughout the pre-draft season, you got so much tape to work with that, yeah, he might not have had the upside as guys like a Barton per se, but to me, man, you got such a large amount of tape at center and him having to do, you know, pick up different things and seeing all this stuff. In other words, I think what you see is what you get. I it probably made the evaluation a lot easier on him because of all those snaps.
Sure. And Pittsburgh to some degree, and I think all teams apply to this as well, the less projection you have to make for a prospect, the more comfortable you are in taking him. There's always projection anytime it's college to the NFL. There is no guarantees in the NFL draft. If there was, then teams would just, you know, never miss on picks. Right. But Frazier is somebody that I think had a cleaner projection because of all the snaps that he played.
I agree. And that was one of the things that I tried to get across during the pre-draft process there.
All right, Dave, what else is there to talk about? Not as much. Mark Cabali doesn't think Justin Fields will be used in specialty packages, putting aside the whole kick returner discussion, which, you know, I think is just a more off-season fodder type thing. If there is anything to it, we'll talk about it more when Mike Tomlin speaks and once we see him maybe in OTAs and certainly for training camp. But for the idea of, could he come in with some, you know, run packages and use him in a couple of different ways to get him on the field, even if he is the backup quarterback, I think they should. I think they will. I think he's a guy too talented to treat as a true backup quarterback who holds the clipboard the entire time, unless and until Russell Wilson gets hurt.
I think they'd be foolish not to implement some things designed for him. And I would start showing some of those things. I mean, obviously, you're not going to once a starter comes out during the preseason and all like that, you're not going to, you know, rotate guys in and out like that. But I mean, as early in the season as possible, I would seriously consider. And I think we've had this discussion after Fields, you know, was traded for and all like that is. Yeah, I think they should not only, you know, have some sort of package in there for him, whether, you know, whether it be a between the 40s type situation, between the 20s type situation, and then in a red zone type situation for him. And then I would not be afraid to show that stuff early in the season as well, too, because that gives opposing teams something else to have to plan for in game plans and all like that. And, you know, as we know how athletic he is. Boy, if there's one thing in his highlight tape, it's that ability to extend plays and ability to do things on the hoof, if you will. So, yeah, I think they should. I think they will. I'll be surprised if they don't have some sort of limited package for him.
Same. And it may only be for short yardage situations, third and two, goal line type stuff. But there's usefulness. Those are big money downs. Those are critical situations. And I think Cavalli's point was, you know, Wilson's athletic. He can run. He can still run, but not like Fields. Fields is at a whole different level. He's so much younger and just so much more dynamic. And so it's a different level. Wilson can, you know, occasionally pull the ball in a read option as a surprise element, sort of. But Fields is a true guy that can make plays in space with his legs and you know, score on third and two from the 3 yard line, third and goal, something like that. So I think they will. You know, how much it'll vary. There'll be times where they won't use it the entire game. There'll be times where they use it five times in the game, just based on game circumstances and game plans that week, the defense they're facing, etc. So we'll have to see, but I think they should. I think they will. And it's just a question of, I think, how much they'll use it.
Look, Fields is a guy that either if you make one man miss, or if you have one fit not fit perfectly or something along that, he can house it, you know?
Sure. And defenses will have to account for him in the run game. They're going to have to bring an extra guy down or have to dedicate time to game planning. Okay, are we going to mesh charge? Are we going to slant and scrape? Are we going to try to surf the end man to try to play both? I mean, you're going to have to deal with that. So not only the actual running element of it, if he does take off with the football, but just how defenses approach you, how they may have to change their style, is also an impact just by his mere presence being on the field.
Right. So that will obviously be something to watch once we get the regular season underway. But I'm with you, and I think we both came to this conclusion a couple of weeks ago with him. Mm-hmm. That's something that they really should consider doing, even if it's super limited.
Then last thing here, it's small, and again, it's kind of some off-season media fodder, but it comes from an ex-Steeler, so it's worth discussing here, worth mentioning. Willie Colon believes that, I don't know if he means this in a super, he'll be fired after the season sort of sense, but thinks Mike Tomlin is on the hot seat, basically, for this lack of playoff success and just trying to get over this hump that Pittsburgh is on. And I think there's some validity to the idea, at least, of him needing to get over this hump and for the organization to finally win a playoff game and get past kind of where they've been stuck at for the last several seasons. So do I think Tomlin's on the true hot seat? No. Although, when is that extension going to come for him? Typically, yeah, it comes in April. I mean, I still think it's going to happen. It's not going to be a lame duck situation, but maybe not till June, July.
That will be the true answer to this question, I think. And obviously, there's been a lot of speculation that that will happen at some point during this offseason with him. And the moment, assuming that extension does happen, it would be hard to imagine that you give him the extension then you turn around and fire him after you know the 2024 season, no matter how bad it might be.
Yeah, I'm just trying to look back on past times and where he had signed his extension. The last one came April 20th of 2021, but the couple others look like it happened in July. One happened July 13th, 2010. One happened July 24th, 2012. So maybe they will wait until right before training camp for that to occur. I there's no way they don't do an extension with him. He's going to get extended. Is that a fair statement?
That's been my feel of the situation for sure. Yeah.
How long an extension do you think it'll be? David O and I were talking about this weekend. His current deal runs through 2024, my guess, and it, you know, we're just kind of guessing. I would say a 2-year extension that would run him through 2026.
That would make sense there. But look, here's the thing: extend him or not, you roll back to those comments that Rooney made about we got to win. We got to get in not only get in the playoffs. We got to win some playoff games here. So if you don't accomplish that goal in 2024, no matter what the extension, assuming it happens, looks like, then 2025 really becomes a hot seat season.
I know we're kind of getting over our skis here. I don't want to turn this into the shock jock radio type stuff, but do you think he'd ever get fired, you know, like a traditional coach would? It's just hard for me to believe that. It took so much for Matt Canada to be fired, and that even occurred midseason, all the money you'd be paying, you know, Tomlin to not coach your team for a season or two. Again, that's all talk for way down the road, but I just have a hard time Rooney, you know, actually doing that.
Same.
It would have to be maybe, I'm not even going to broach exactly when that would be, but I think it obviously would take a lot there. But yeah, there's a question of if these results keep happening, despite all the roster changes you made and the big upheaval of quarterback play, and if you still can be a team that goes 9-8, 10-7, and you get one and done in the wild card round, at some point you can't, at least from the national media perspective, can't just keep, you know, hanging the banner for the non-losing season streak. That's clearly not what Pittsburgh's goal is, and nor should it be. And you can feel the frustration of that. They're not satisfied by just getting to where they're getting.
If you roll back to what this roster looked like right after the first wave of futures were signed back in, what, February, January, February, and then fast forward in through the all the cuts that they had, and then obviously free agent signing since. And look, I think Omar Khan even said, you know, we're not done shaping this roster. He said that after the draft and all like that. I believe them. I still think there's going to be there needs to be another add in the wide receiver room. I think we both agree on that. And let's say that ends up being moderately significant or better.
Okay.
Whatever that looks like. Have they done a good enough job, at least will they have done a good enough job, at least putting together a team that should be able to compete?
Basically you're asking, is the roster better now than where they left it post Bills game? Is that a fair way to kind of sum things up?
Right.
Yeah, I think there's still holes.
Well, because obviously, and I'm talking about those holes as well too. Because I don't think they're done.
I agree.
I don't think they're done, and I know, and look, here's the thing. The Seahawks created some cap room somehow, and I don't think that's a DK. I'm not 100% sure, but it doesn't look like that was a DK Metcalf restructure. Obviously, if they restructure DK Metcalf, you can forget about him, right?
Sure, but if they had done that with him, you would have heard about it by now. That would have been reported.
Think so, but I mean they're not even showing yet who this recent restructure is yet. Now by the time this podcast airs, and maybe by the next 24 hours, we should know who that restructure for the Seahawks. I'm just saying that until it looks like Metcalf is 100% not a candidate to be dealt, he's a candidate to be dealt. And I use that loosely. Do I think this is ultimately going to come to fruition with him? I'm not saying that, but man, one of these guys, and by these guys I mean like Sutton or Cortland Sutton and DK Metcalf, and you look at, you know, the cash spending that this team has and has not done up until this point. Man, a $13 million base salary cash payment certainly looks like it would fit within that. That magically is the base salary both those guys are set to earn in 2024. My patented long story short here, they're going to add to that room.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not going to get hung up on a name. It could be anybody. I think also at slot corner, I'm even more confident they will bring somebody in there. I don't know who, probably an ex-Steeler, Peterson, Sutton, Chandon Sullivan, somebody like that. But just kind of earmarking those two things. To answer your question, has the roster gotten better? I would say yes, in part because there's a real identity to this team.
When you improve the offensive line, better
quarterback room.
Just leave it. Just end the conversation at that. You know,
sure.
A better quarterback room. Period.
Yeah. A better coordinator at OC, even though Arthur Smith may not be exactly the next Sean McVay or Kyle Shanahan. He's an upgrade there. And so just the structure of your offense is sounder. And while this defense still has maybe some questions, the Steelers defense is always strong and the foundational pillars are still in place. And TJ Watt and a healthy Cam Hayward, which is big, and Minkah Fitzpatrick. You have those three guys, you give yourself a chance. And they were the number six scoring defense last year, despite having Hayward for only half the season, having so many issues at safety. Minkah was hurt for chunks of the year. All the issues at inside linebacker, and they were still a top five scoring defense in football. So to answer that question, I think it is better. I mean, I think they are now a roster capable of winning a playoff game and getting over that hump. I don't think they're a Super Bowl contender right now because I don't know if the offense is still as potent as it needs to be, if the quarterback play will be as strong as it needs to be to compete with all the elite arms in the AFC. So I think they've gotten themselves to the chance to win a playoff game. If you're in divisional weekend, then, you know, who knows what could happen from there. You're one of the final, what, eight teams. And so that gives you a chance. But that's where I think Pittsburgh is at.
What would you have done differently, if anything, in this roster construction this offseason?
not traded Deontay Johnson. I'm still scratching my head at that one. I know we were all preaching, let's be patient. Let's see what moves they do in the draft and if anything else comes in around these trade rumors. And something could still happen and that could end up making the deal look a whole lot better. But to me, that is a big one that still I have a hard time getting my head around, especially if you believe the team. Deontay did not ask for a trade. Now, they may say that, you know, they just didn't feel like it was a great fit culturally, and they talked a lot at the end of the season about just kind of re-changing the culture, getting that in a good place. It was a tense season overall, and Deontay showed his frustration, it seemed, many times, but they still got worse from a talent standpoint in that trade.
All right, now, once again, assuming that they get this significant player...
Well, that's a big assumption.
I mean, we both agree they're not done adding... We don't think they're done adding to this wide receiver room, right?
Sure. But does that mean DK Metcalf or does that mean Zay Jones? I don't know.
I mean, I'm not thinking I would not qualify Zay Jones or a Tyler Boyd as being the kind of guy that I would like to see added to that room.
Sure. I would love to see them go get one of those top names, but that's not entirely in Pittsburgh's control. They can only do so much. And it seems they've been trying to land one of those guys and been unable to land one of those guys. Could that change at some point down the road? Sure, that could change. But there's no guarantee of that.
All right. But if they do, how will you look back on the Deontay Johnson situation then?
Well, I still look at trades as the trades itself. Did you win the trade or lose the trade as opposed to all the circumstantial things around you? Because, you know, you could, if you traded Deontay for a 7th-round pick and then go trade it for Brandon Ayuk, did you win the Deontay Johnson trade? I still think you would lost the trade, but you still found a really talented guy and a better player in Brandon Ayuk. But you would feel better about just the whole circumstances of it, of course, in your receiver room in general, if you could land an A or even B tier type of wide receiver, sure.
Well, here's the thing. The hope is that conversation we had at the start of this podcast of Callaway, Jefferson, Watkins, hopefully all that becomes moot, right?
Sure. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would love for them to go land even a Cortland Sutton at this point. I think, you know, post-draft, considering there aren't any other big free agents out there to get, you go trade for Cortland Sutton for a 4th-round pick next year, I'm good with that. I think that completes your receiver room as much as it needs to for Pittsburgh to thrive this year.
All right, we'll revisit the roster construction thing when we get to the start of training camp here.
Sure,
and then see how much it's changed since then.
And then the 53-man roster before week one will be the ultimate look at what this team looks like going into the new season, which schedule release should come out this week too. That'll be a new thing. I think Thursday they're talking about the schedule. Dropping those things typically start leaking out the day before. They might announce some of the big marquee, you know, holiday games and stuff like that. So we'll see what Pittsburgh plays week one. I know they're scheduled to play at Denver this year. Could you get a Pittsburgh at Denver week one, get a Russell Wilson storyline going to begin the year?
I think the best thing about all that is I like to set up that that schedule bingo card where you start blocking out. It just affords me an opportunity to play in Excel and use colors.
Your two favorite things, Excel and colors.
But I think I don't know if you could sit here and play guessing game of who's going to, you know, what's going to be the week one game, all that kind of stuff. But I think it would be kind of intriguing for a Steelers versus Broncos week one matchup. I don't know if that's going to come to fruition, obviously, but it would be quite the talk ahead of week one.
Yeah, I mean, we can probably discuss more of it for Wednesday in terms of the schedule. That will be the other big thing on the docket this week. At least that's been the reporting. But what are some other potential interesting matchups? We know, is it official Browns-Eagles in Brazil? Week one, that's been confirmed, I think, right?
I believe so, yes. No, it was rumored. No. It was Packers, right?
It's a Packers? Okay. I just remember the Browns being rumored for so long. I know it's not Pittsburgh. I know they're not going to play in Brazil to open up that the year on that Friday. So, that is out. We can guarantee that, essentially. What other games besides AFC North type stuff, which sometimes they open up against North opponents, but putting those teams aside, what other do you think would be the most interesting, compelling week one matchups for Pittsburgh?
I always like to see when the first, obviously, AFC North game actually is.
Yeah, and it could be week one, but let's assume for a second it's not, because those were just kind of the obvious ones to mention there.
I guess let's see.
Week one, what do you think would be the best week one matchup, the most interesting game, opponent they could be playing to begin the season?
Well, I think I just named it in the Broncos. I think that would be quite intriguing there. Who else? Obviously Cowboys, Steelers, but I don't think that will be a week. At least I don't think that'll be a week one game. Let's see.
Chargers, be interesting. See Harbaugh's first game back in the NFL.
And that's at home, right? That would be at home.
It'd be a home game. It'd be nice to get also more home games. Well, right. let's get a home game streak going here for Pittsburgh after being on the road for so long until last season.
Be honest with you, the only thing that I'm really interested in is the away games against, you know, when will they have to go out west to play the Raiders in Vegas, would be one, and then really the Broncos game is going to be a huge talking point whenever that is on the schedule.
But at Atlanta to begin the year, Arthur Smith's old team, Kirk Cousins' first game, NFC. I don't know how often the NFC, you know, AFC, NFC games open up, but that'd be a fun one to start with.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a rarity last year, right? Opening up against the NFC team in the 49ers. So I kind of wonder if you'd get that in back-to-back years. So,
right.
I would bet I'd be willing. And we already know the Eagles won't be one of those games. So that's one of the NFC teams that they won't play in week one. Let's see. They've got the Giants on the schedule. They've got the Commanders. They've got the – who else in that division?
The Cowboys.
Cowboys. Right. So I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that their week one game won't be an NFC opponent.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, that narrows it down
just very little.
So we'll see from there. But yeah, that'll be one thing to watch. We'll talk about it more Wednesday. And then obviously Friday show, we should know the entire schedule by then and can really go into it. I mean, I'm not somebody that is crazy about the schedule release because we already know the teams. I know obviously you want to see bye weeks and, you know, just end of the season, start of the season, those types of things. There is, you know, some value to it. I think it matters a bit more for the players themselves. I know we'll be watching for how many night games there are. That's always kind of the top thing we look for. Hopefully, you know, in Pittsburgh probably will play several night games, 3, 4, 5, as they tend to do because of the big national media draw. But for me, that I'm not somebody that gets too wrapped up in the schedule release.
Right. But let me tell you, the NFL will make a show out of anything and make an event out of anything. And that will once again be an event. So anyway, something to look forward to maybe later on this week. Have they officially said that it'll be Thursday, or is it still speculating that it'll be Thursday?
I think it's still speculating, but I think some of the more plugged in reporters like Jonathan Jones have been pretty strongly hinting at Thursday. Okay. So not guaranteed, I don't believe, but that would be my belief right now.
All right. What else?
That's all I got, Dave. Anything else you want to get to, feel free. If not, we can get to some reader emails and close out today's show. Reminder, no live stream tonight. We had one last week. We'll have one next week, but no live stream tonight.
All right, let's get to the mailbag. Brian Tolini, good morning, Dave and Alex. Using Alex's 53-man roster prediction as a guide, I count only 19 out of the 53 players with Kevin Colbert connections remaining. Some of this, of course, is just normal roster turnover from year to year, but there has also been a purposeful effort to change the chemistry of this team, and by numerous trades and outside free agent signings Khan has made, is declining Najee's fifth-year option less about the player himself and more about Khan continuing to put his own stamp on this team? We always say that the Steelers don't rebuild, but I think that is what Khan has done over the last two off seasons. Compare this roster to 2022, and a lot of it is unrecognizable. Look, you just get that churn, you know, every two. It's interesting sometimes come week one of a season to pull up, or right after the week one game, and then go to the game book and pull up the actual 53-man roster that's listed in the game book of the week one game and roll back two or three seasons ago to the same situation after week one game. Just see how it's churned. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's just how it happens. You know, I I don't view the declining of the fifth year option on Najee as I got to get Kevin Colbert's guys out of here as soon as possible. I think it was just a business decision and a position and all like this. So I guess what he's hinting at here is Omar Khan doing his best to kind of distance himself from the Kevin Colbert rosters as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it that. I think you're right. If you take any 2-year snapshot, the way it looked 2 years ago to present day, it's going to have a good amount of change to it naturally just in this free agent world. But in any time, even somebody like an internal promotion like Khan comes in, he's his own man with his own ideas. You bring in Andy Weidel with his own thoughts and influences as well. And you're going to have change there. Anytime I think there's a new regime, quote unquote, to some extent, you're going to have that kind of turnover to get your guys in and just have your own stamp on the roster, your own philosophy and vision. And that's going to create a fair amount of change. So I don't think Khan is intentionally running away and shedding himself of the Colbert era and roster. There's great respect there, but it just I think natural for any new GM to come in, and you're going to have a good amount of roster churn as you kind of start setting the roster the way that you want it to be looked at. And I think that's just kind of commonplace for any new GM.
We don't have a lot of emails here, so I'm going to indulge him a little bit. Let's go back to week one, 53-man roster as listed in the week one game book against the 49ers. On offense, Pickens, he'll obviously be back. Allen Robinson, Dan Moore Jr., Isaac Seumalo, Mason Cole, obviously gone. James Daniels, Chukwuma Okorafor, gone. Pat Freiermuth, Deontay Johnson, gone. Kenny Pickett, gone. Najee Harris, that was your starters on offense. On defense, Cameron Hayward, Montrevious Adams, Larry Ogunjobi, TJ Watt, Cole Holcomb, Landon Roberts, Alex Highsmith, Levi Wallace, Patrick Peterson, both those guys not currently under contract. Minkah Fitzpatrick, Keanu Neal. Let's see. And then the substitution, Presley Harvin, gone. Boswell, Boykin, gone. Austin still there. Casey, Joey Porter Jr., Anthony McFarland. How soon we forgot Anthony McFarland was actually on the 53-man roster week one last year.
And was it their best player in that game offensively?
Miles Killebrew, Jaylen Warren, Chandon Sullivan, Riley, James Pierre, gone. Marcus Golden, not under contract. Kuntz, obviously long snapper. Nick Herbig, Quan Alexander, not on the roster. Nate Herbig, Jones, the tackle. Oh, Broderick. I drew a blank.
Yeah.
All of a sudden.
Okay. Yep.
Gotcha. Washington at tight end. Connor Hayward. Isaiah Loudermilk. Mark Robinson, Keanu Benton, DeMarvin Leal, did not play in that game, but dressed. Trubisky and Spencer Anderson, inactive for that game. Mason Rudolph, Desmond King, Dylan Cook, Gunnar Olszewski, Armon Watts.
Yeah, I mean, just off the top, a lot more change offensively than defensively, it felt like. Some changes in the secondary. So, I mean, again, that's all probably typical roster turnover stuff to some extent. I think offensively, obviously, you're seeing a pretty substantial change in terms of what's been added since.
Yeah, I mean, that this year's week 153 is going to have a good third, if not more, not there.
Yeah, so, again, I think that some of that, it's not really, to me, Khan just trying to, again, run away from what Colbert built. It's just kind of the natural roster building process. Whenever new ideas come in, new people come in, you have a new scouting department, you have a new assistant GM, obviously Khan and his new post that just comes with change. And the NFL always changes.
All right. Luke Weaver writes in, plans to blow it up? Dave and Alex, I don't want to be too doom and gloom, but I'm getting worried about the Steelers' long-term plans. With the moves they made in free agency, they really seem to be in win-now mode. But that's the plan. But what's the plan if they don't win now? He says, the decision to not pick up Najee's option is concerning. If they decide not to extend Freiermuth, I will be even more concerned, he says. No longer term deals for Fields. He writes, no new contracts for existing players at all this year. Could they be planning to keep the cap charge low, load up on compensatory picks, and blow this roster up if they fail to win a playoff game this year? Perhaps even letting Tomlin, quote-unquote, retire and turn the team over to a new coach with as much cap space and draft capital as possible to start fresh, or am I needlessly panicking? Well, Luke, you asked. I think it's way too early to look at this as a plans to blow it up. And I do kind of view this as kind of needlessly panicking. Look, I mean, the Najee decision, option decision, you can see kind of both sides of that. Well, let's wait and see what happens with Pat Freiermuth later off this offseason. I from a cash perspective alone, man, it feels like they almost have to do it because they got to spend some cash, you know, with him. I will be surprised they don't extend Freiermuth. It will be interesting to see what happens. Alex and I have talked about with Justin Fields, but it takes two to tango there. There's enough reason for him to not agree to an extension this offseason, talking about Justin Fields, as there is possibly for him to maybe agree to one. There's got to be some common ground. You don't need to overpay a player like that. However, common you would like to at least have one quarterback under contract moving past this season. As far as to be in win now mode, Omar Khan and Art Rooney the second would like you to believe that every offseason they try to build this roster to potentially win a Super Bowl. I think it's a bit too early to be kind of having a question of plan to blow it up.
Yeah, I don't see that as their vision. I think they're just they're trying to do the opposite. I think they're trying to win right now. There's an urgency to this offseason and some of these more moves that feel a bit more radical than past off seasons, because you have an aging defense where Hayward is now officially 35 and Watt's about to turn 30, and you know, you have this core and this defense that is great right now, but won't be in place the way that it currently sits, you know, three years from now. And so you're trying to maximize this window of got to pick our offense up to support this defense and try to, you know, get TJ Watt his first ever playoff win and get Cam Hayward will be his second playoff win in terms of games he appeared for, and not get to the point where it takes us 3 years to build this offense. And then by then our defense has to then get rebuilt itself when you're kind of on the seesaw, because Pittsburgh has been on that, you know, it was in what, the 2015, 2018 kind of range where you had a really strong and potent offense, your defense is struggling. And then your defense got really good from 2019, you know, kind of to present date, and your offense has been lackluster since. And you've kind of been on this seesaw. You can't get this balance with a good offense and a good defense. That's tough to do, obviously, but that's what the championship teams are able to achieve. And that's what Pittsburgh has done in past years, what they're not able to do right now. So I think there's an urgency to win right now, recognizing the window that they're in. I wouldn't call it a Super Bowl window, but just a window based on where this defense is at and some of the stars there. But yeah, I think a lot of this, as Dave said, let's let the offseason play out, see what they do or don't do. I don't think the scenario of letting Tomlin retire to give a new coach salary cap and picks is anywhere even close to their mind right now.
Right. I would agree. All right. One more from Corey Long writes in, Roman Wilson at Z. Hey, Dave and Alex, wonder what you guys think about Roman Wilson playing the Z position. If the concern is inexperience against press, wouldn't lining up at the Z address that, or do you see bigger limitations in his game? Unrelated trade question. Thinking back to last year's Dotson trade, could you see something similar with Calvin Austin III, Leal, or Dan Moore Jr., maybe improve some of those extra day three picks for 2025. Look, we still got, you know, the way Roman Wilson, you're going to have to see a lot out of him, I think, to really start putting him out wide.
Yeah, again, these guys mix and match more than they used to. I think post-AB, you've seen more of that flexibility. So Wilson will play out wide some. He's not going to be solely a slot receiver. And yeah, playing Z where you're kind of off the ball a bit can help see a little less press. But there's just the size aspect and strength aspect. He's got to get stronger and work his hands and his releases a bit better because he's not had to do much of that. And Pickens is obviously, I think, pretty strong and pretty secure as that Z type, although he moved around and played the slot more often than he did as a rookie. So again, I think you know, to, I don't want to paint with too broad of a brush, but Wilson is going to be your primary slot receiver. That's how he's won in college. That's how I think his skill set is set to win in the NFL.
I agree. And I think this is, let's see what happens post June 1st. Let's see what else is added to that room. We're trying to go big picture here right now on May the 6th. And I earnestly believe Omar Khan when he said, we've still got some roster building to do here.
Yeah, they do, but I don't want to get in the weeds on this, but what is the incentive for Seattle to trade DK Metcalf? Like, why would they do
look, that? We've hit all that. If they needed cap space and they were going to restructure him, it feels like they would have restructured him now. I'm not saying it's just if you're going to build a list and everybody continues to talk about Debo and Brandon Ayuk and all, but I mean, the more that's talked about, the more the other side says it's not going to happen. You know,
mm-hmm. I mean, just forgetting the particular name, how comfortable or confident in you if the Steelers plan, and that this is an if, but if their plan is to go trade for any of these receivers, if that's their plan, are you comfortable and confident in that being their plan?
Let's talk about one. I mean, let's narrow it down. You know, it feels like it's going, if they were to trade for a significant wide receiver, be one of four, right? Cortland Sutton.
Yeah. Okay.
Brandon Ayuk, Debo Samuel, or DK Metcalf, right? Does it feel like if it was going to be a significant trade of any sorts to bring in, and I know people were trying to throw that Giants wide receiver in here, but I mean, how do you feel about that?
Darius Slayton. I mean, that's why I just don't want to get hung up on one name. I don't either. Yeah. So, but just whatever name you think is most likely or any pool of names. My concern is that Pittsburgh's trying to bank on this trade happening where teams now post-draft have much less incentive to make a deal.
Sure. Sure.
That's my concern.
I still think that I don't think he's done.
Yeah, I don't think, when you say you don't think he's done, do you think that means that trade that he will be able to pull off one of these trades?
My gut's been my gut's probably been batting worse than the Pirates.
your Henry Davis levels right now. We're back on Triple A.
Yeah, but I got a feeling that they got something up their sleeve there.
But does that mean a trade for one of those four names?
I think so, Alex.
Okay. And, I hope so.
I mean, and sure, carve this out of the podcast and say Dave thought for sure that, you know, his gut told him that they were going to deal for one and it didn't happen. So how's that gut feel now? You know, I don't know. It feels like almost they have to.
Right.
To be honest with you.
I'm not trying to pin you down. I'm just trying to get a sense for what you mean whenever you say that they're not done, because I hope that's the case. I mean, it'd be disappointing if it's ta-da, here's Zay Jones.
I don't want to talk about as much as intriguing as a guy like Marquez Callaway is. I don't want to be talking about him, Watkins or Van Jefferson much longer past June 1st.
Sure, there's a level of cope to, hey, Callaway could be pretty good. It's like you'd rather go get that more established guy. Right. So I get that.
We're talking about the quality of the Ritz cracker then, you know.
Right. So I hope you're right. I just, obviously, when you're kind of banking on a trade occurring, it's a lot of stuff out of your control.
Right.
And I think it's easier to do that pre-draft when you can trade some of that capital. And the team says, okay, we can trade this guy. We can use that draft pick to go get a receiver in a good class. Now with the free agent pool, you know, very shallow, you have to find a team that is either there's some malcontent where a guy just really wants out and the team says, okay, let's just dump this guy, or they have great depth at receiver, or there's some financial reason in which they feel like they have to trade a receiver. I mean, teams aren't just going to give these guys away and make themselves worse without a real reason to do it or without some way to justify them still being able to compete and win.
I agree. But and part of our job on this show is try to read the tea leaves as best we can and speculate off of that within reason. And I don't know that's where my gut is right now. So,
OK, I still to be hypocrite for a second, I still think it's going to be one name. It's going to be Cortland Sutton. I think that's the name that still makes the most amount of sense, because especially he seems like he's not happy with the situation in Denver right now, and that's an incentive to deal that guy.
Okay, very well could be, and it matches up, you know.
Yeah, it does. All right, any other emails, Dave?
The last part here, he asked about last year's Dotson trade. Could you see something similar with you know Calvin Austin III, Leal, Dan Moore Jr.?
Yeah, I mean, it's always possible, depending on what happens injury-wise to other teams. I mean, again, I think if we're talking Leal, it's Kendrick Green. If that even levels, you know, Moore would have more value. Calvin Austin, to me, would have very – I think even getting anything for Austin would be tough to do unless he had, you know, impressed in the summer. And if he's impressing, then you probably want to hold on to the guy. So those things are always possible. I think Pittsburgh could also be looking to make a trade for somebody this year with some of their draft capital that they're going to have. I don't know who that could be. And it could be receiver, it could be corner, it could be injury replacement based on what happens and transpires this summer. So I think all those things are, of course, on the table. It'll be easier to talk about once you get closer to that, you know, cut down deadline late August.
Right, right. Because so many things can happen between now and then. And then, look, I mean, is it out of the question that the Steelers trade away a player right before the 53-man roster's set? And it's not unthinkable.
Right. And it's also very much plausible they add somebody. They've done both over the years. We'll just have to wait and see. Khan's done both. He's added guys. He's dealt guys. It's all just based on situations.
All right. For not having a lot to talk about today, we had a lot to talk about today, I think.
We do our best. I think we find a way to make it work. And so we'll come back Wednesday. Still not sure what we'll talk about Wednesday. Probably more schedule stuff. Anything else that comes up along the way, maybe find out the tryout, the rookie minicamp roster, some more tryout names. We'll let you know.
All right. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter/X at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex at Alex_Kozora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we're doing, want to donate to the cause, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button up right, navigational bar. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the ad-free button up right, navigational bar, and follow the directions that way. And until Wednesday, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.